This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Abigail Lorenzen, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Abigail Lorenzen.
And I'm Scott Kump. I Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
This program is sponsored in part by Rock Hill Design, serving nonprofits and entrepreneurs with personal branding, print design, and web creation. Learn more at rockhilldesign.com.
And now, the pro-life news.
On Tuesday, May 2nd, Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb signed Senate Enrolled Act 246 on baby safes into law. The legislation expands the safe haven law by allowing the installation at designated sites of baby safes, temperature-controlled units that alert emergency personnel if a baby is surrendered into it. Baby safes are also commonly called baby boxes. Senate Enrolled Act 246 was authored by State Senator Travis Holdeman of Markle and was sponsored by Martin Carbaugh of Fort Wayne in the Indiana House of Representatives. Representative Dave Hine of New Haven offered an amendment to grandfather in the baby safes already in operation, including the one at the Woodburn, Indiana Fire Station. Current safe haven law allows a newborn up to 30 days to be surrendered without question at a police station, hospital, or fire station. Before this new legislation, the baby had to be given directly to a representative at one of those locations. In the 15 years that Indiana's safe haven law has been in effect, 33 babies have been surrendered legally. By contrast, 39 babies have been abandoned illegally in that same time frame, and many have not survived. Kathy Humbarger of Allen County Right to Life and Indiana Right to Life applauded the measure, noting that Governor Holcomb had signed the law on his birthday and stating her belief that, quote, his decision to sign the baby safe law will give Hoosier babies future birthdays, end quote. Humbarger went on to say, quote, we pray the word gets out to mothers in desperate situations so that no more children are found in snowbanks or the trash, end quote. More information about baby safes is available at safehavenbabyboxes.com. The baby safe hotline is 1-866-99-BABY-1, 1-866-99-BABY-1.
In studio with me today, I have Lisa Davis, who's a staff member at a Hope Center, one of our local pregnancy resource centers here in Fort Wayne. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Abigail.
I love that you're here with us because we get to talk about a topic that we don't hit all that often on I Choose Life, and that is post-abortive healing, and specifically the post-abortive Bible study that a Hope Center offers. So you have a long history with Hope Center. You've been there 17 years now, and you do psychiatric nursing, which sounds fantastic and very interesting. But you also have a history of abortion, or a history with abortion, I should say, that's very personal. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
When I was 18 years old, I was dating someone who I'm actually now married to. We've been married for over 30 years. I'm not going to count exactly because I know I'm going to forget the exact years.
That's all right.
But he and I, Mike and I, were dating. And while we were dating, I got pregnant. And I actually didn't know that when I ended up at the abortion clinic that I was at an abortion clinic.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
I had been referred there by another organization. And when I had my pregnancy test, this is just kind of how naive I was. And the person, I don't know if she was a nurse or what she was, but she said, your test is positive. I said, oh, good. Because I thought as an 18-year-old, positive was good. I mean, that's just the place I was in. I was so very naive. And
well, in this case, positive is good, right? You're gonna be a baby.
Yes, it is good. But for somebody who wasn't planning pregnancy, it was very scary news. I immediately kind of went on autopilot. I think that a lot of women are in a state of shock even before they find out they're pregnant. And
just because of the possibility?
Because of the possibility and the fear and everything that involves. And so when she actually slapped an appointment in my hand and said, well, we'll see you in 2 weeks for an abortion. Now, mind you, I didn't even know I was at an abortion clinic.
So how did you get referred to there?
By another organization.
Okay. And it wasn't your doctor's office or anything. It was somewhere where you went seeking help and they sent you to the abortion clinic for a pregnancy test.
Yes.
Okay. So they did the pregnancy test. You got a positive.
Yes.
And then she said, we'll see you in 2 weeks. At that point, what's going through your head?
Honestly, not a lot. I mean, total fear. Fear just takes over. Fear takes over for a lot of women. So they're operating in this state of incredible panic and fear when they're trying to make a life-changing decision. I mean, life-altering for them and ending the life of their baby. Mm-hmm. And they're not even really thinking through that because they're so scared. Mm-hmm. Most women are. I think some women might, you know, make the decision sort of clinically or something like that. But most women are probably pretty scared. And that comes not only from my own experience, but from the experience of working with many, many women who are in a unplanned pregnancy.
Where was Mike?
He was not there for the test, but he did come for the actual abortion. And during that time frame, we were not really together. We had broken up and we got back together. Basically, I made this decision. I guess it was sort of somebody helped me make it, you know, in the clinic. The psychology of putting the appointment in your hand in that time frame is extremely powerful.
Right.
Because it just tells you, you know, you've got this thing that's going to take care of this problem and you're scared. And so you, and I'm not blaming them. I mean, I take responsibility for not changing my decision.
But I think them doing that is intentional.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. If you put it in someone's hand, it feels like it's already set. It's already done.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so according to like his perspective, he thought I had made the decision. And like many men, his idea was, well, you know, this is your body. And I can't tell you what to do. I found out many years later that he actually wanted me to carry the pregnancy, but he didn't say anything because he didn't feel like he had a right to. And I think if he had said something, it would have definitely given me courage to carry the pregnancy. At least I would have had an opportunity to think that through. My parents ended up finding out, and my parents basically said the same thing, which is, it sounds like support, but it's not support, which is we'll support whatever decision you make.
Yeah.
And so when I talk to clients, I tell clients at a Hope Center, look, we're going to support you to make a decision that you can live with. We can't refer you for an abortion and we're not going to, obviously we don't do the abortion. We're not going to refer you, but you can do this. This is what I wish that somebody had told me. You can do this.
Yeah.
And we'll support you. We'll be behind you. If you place for adoption, we'll support you. We'll be behind you. If you carry the pregnancy, we'll support you. We'll be behind you. And if you do have an abortion, we're not going to support that decision, but we still love you and we care for you. So we want you to know that you can come back to us and we'll help you try to pick up the pieces. Often they don't for many years.
Right. There's a little point of interest in there for me based on other stories that I've heard. Because in many cases, what I hear is the couple becomes pregnant and that's when the relationship breaks. And then the woman never sees the man again. And you said that you and Mike were broken up at the time that you had that appointment made. So was that the case that when you found out that you were expecting, that's when your relationship broke up?
No, it was before that.
Okay.
And I think that was an attempt to get him back as being with him. So when we got back together, it was actually right before the abortion took place. And he went with me and he stayed out in the car. I was inside and we had a very difficult relationship after that, actually for many, many years, even after we got married. I've actually seen something kind of different with a lot of women who are dating. It's like not only did the intimacy bond that, does it bond them together, but the fact that they had a child together sort of bonds them as well. And it kind of forces the relationship. It's like they're hanging on to the last known representation of their of their baby by hanging on to each other. And that doesn't make it functional. It doesn't make it very, you know, it's not very healthy generally. But I have seen some clients that have stayed together surprisingly more than I had initially thought.
Yeah, that's sort of
but I would say you're right that most relationships break up after an abortion.
So now you and Mike are married and have been married for 30 something years, which is great. And you have two more children.
Yes.
And then you've got two grandchildren, one of whom is in utero currently and due here in a couple of weeks.
She's still there. She is very much there.
Yeah.
And she's kicking and She's ready to be born in about 4 weeks. So we're really excited about that.
That's awesome. So can you talk to us a little bit about what you went through post-abortion? Mm-hmm. And talk to us about how, what your journey looked like a little bit, and especially to the point where you got into a post-abortive healing program.
Well, like many women, my processing of it took a number of years for it to sort of surface and for me to understand what it was that I was struggling with.
Did you bury it right away, or what did that look like?
I cried a lot for just a few days, and then I buried it. And a lot of unhealthy behavior sort of came up to sort of mask it, you know, partying and
because you were
avoiding.
Only 18 at the time.
I was only 18. Yeah. I didn't really have a relationship with God at the time. I mean, I believed in God, but I didn't really have much of a relationship with God. And so my time was spent really trying to avoid dealing with the reality of what I had done. So I kind of buried myself in school and tried to make my relationship work. And then we actually broke up another time, and then we got back together. And then we decided to make it permanent by mm-hmm. announcing an engagement. And all of that was, I think, very forced at the time. So that was a way that I coped. I think we coped by sort of hanging on to each other in a sort of dysfunctional kind of way.
Yeah.
And then years later, I ended up being infertile for about 4.5 years after we started trying to have kids.
Okay.
And that infertility time was a huge wake-up call for me. And we just kind of, every month came and went, mm-hmm. and I began to feel that I was being punished. I did suffer some anxiety at that time, but the anxiety and the depression came quite a bit later after we had children.
So how many years at this point are we talking before that anxiety hit?
It was in 1995.
So like
I actually had a little bit of postpartum depression after my daughter was born, 1992. Okay. And I'm not saying this for everybody who mm-hmm. has postpartum depression.
Right.
But I do think that if there's an abortion in the past, postpartum depression might be an indication of not dealing with that pregnancy loss from the abortion. And I definitely feel that in my case. But I worked through that without any medication or anything. And then that was after my daughter was born in 1992. In 1995, my son was born. And what happened was I had just two little distinct representations of the child that was lost. Mm-hmm. And I really hit bottom. Actually, I hit bottom on Mother's Day of all days.
Oh, no.
I woke up just profoundly anxious and depressed, kind of like something snapped in the middle of the night. And I was a psychiatric nurse at the time.
I was going to say, when did you become a psychiatric nurse? But you were already one.
I was already a psych nurse. I actually became a psych nurse right after I graduated from nursing school. So
okay.
This was after the abortion.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes we do that because we kind of want to figure ourselves out when
we go
into that field. Uh-huh. I'm just speaking for myself.
I can imagine.
But I definitely was aware of the fact that when I got depressed in 1995, that it was definitely related to the abortion. It just kept coming up. It kept coming up. And all these years, what I was really trying to do was to try to ask God. I would ask God for forgiveness, but I would still justify it.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Which truly isn't repentance.
Right.
And so after my son was born and we had the two of them running around all the time, and I just was completely overwhelmed. Well, obviously my son wasn't running around. He was just a baby, but still a lot of care. And uh-huh. I was just exhausted. I was trying to take care of these two little ones, and I felt completely overwhelmed. And I basically went to God and told God I was wholeheartedly sorry for what I had done. It was definitely a spiritual thing. And that is when things really started moving in terms of my healing. But in the years before that, there had been a lot of justification, a lot of, well, I'm sorry, but
right.
I had to do it for this reason and this reason, a lot of masking, a lot of running, a lot of avoidance. Things like baby showers would really get to me, and mm-hmm. anything related to babies before I had children of my own. And then my children, I was very hypervigilant trying to take care of them. I tried to be the perfect mother mm-hmm. because I was so scared that something was going to happen to them.
Yeah. Interesting. So you mentioned earlier that when you had the abortion, you believed in God, but you didn't have a very personal relationship. You weren't very involved in that relationship. When did that change? And then did that come before you sort of had that snap there in 1995? Or did it come after, more in line with the healing process?
It was coming before, gradually, mm-hmm. very gradually. I would say that, I mean, I truly believe that God pursues people. We don't come to God unless he pursues us. And he was pursuing me, and different things were happening. I think the infertility in itself was an opportunity to really think through the decision that we had made, that I had made, and to give me a respect for life. So that was definitely something that was beginning to be at work in my mind and in my heart. And just, you know, the repenting itself, or the sort of half repenting, was an attempt to get closer to God. And he was reaching out to me. And there were so many different things that were happening at that time, just little things like that. But I would say that the big time of awakening came after my son was born. And I just fully repented. And that lifting just came off. And I started to read my Bible more. I had been prompted by a number of people who were leading me. And so it was very encouraging to begin to be pro-life.
Right.
Instead of essentially pro-abortion, because I had justified what
right.
I had done.
Yeah, justifying.
As a matter of fact, I got to tell you this. At one point in my journey, I was, this was a number of years after that event of kind of that snap, but I stood in front of my mirror and I just raised my hands up and I said, I'm pro-life. It was so wonderful to be on a side that I felt like I could live with.
Yeah. And rejoice in.
And rejoice in. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. If you're joining us right now, partway through our program here, we're speaking with Lisa Davis, who works for a Hope Center, and she's a psychiatric nurse, and she's talking with us about post-abortive Bible study and the healing process there. She's been telling us her story, as she is actually herself post-abortive. And Lisa, I'm going to have you now tell us a little bit about a Hope Center's Bible study, what that looks like and what the goals are. Did you go through that Bible study yourself?
I did. Shortly after my conversion, the time when I came to Christ, I went to a Hope Center. It was then the Crisis Pregnancy Center. And I talked to a very longstanding director, Judy Hapke.
Yes, I know Judy.
A lot of people know Judy. And Judy, I remember telling Judy that I was post-abortive, and she told me I needed to go through the Bible study. So she actually led me through the Bible study, because they didn't have anything really active at the time in terms of working with groups of women. And I tried to volunteer, and then a couple of years later, I began to do the Bible study at her invitation, and it was just a great fit. It was a great fit. I love doing that above everything else at the center. I feel definitely a calling for that. So what we do is we do somewhere between a 10 to 14 week Bible study, depending on what actual curriculum we use, what Bible study we use.
Because mm-hmm, there's a couple different ones.
Yes, there's several different ones, and we use a number of different ones depending on the clients that are coming to the study and how well-versed they are in the scriptures. Mm-hmm. There's some that aren't quite as heavy duty as Forgiven and Set Free, which is the long-standing one. They have you all over the Bible in Forgiven and Set Free.
Yeah.
But that's the one we did for many years. And we do two or three Bible studies a year if we can get the groups of women together. Our biggest challenge is simply marketing it, mm-hmm. because so many women feel like, oh, you know, I'm forgiven, I've done that, but they really have no idea how much more healing there is out there for them.
Yeah,
unless we
how get, much grace is there to be had?
There's yeah. abundant. There's just more than we can imagine. So we are doing the Bible studies still. However, we're kind of venturing into something new called Deeper Still. These are weekend retreats.
Oh,
we are aiming to have our first retreat in the fall. And these really are set up a little bit differently in terms of the same kind of things are covered in the retreat, but it's just done in a way that is very, very concentrated, but very individual, but also, you know, individuals and group mm-hmm. work together.
Yeah.
And I'm just really looking forward to doing it. I'm going to go through my first retreat, because it is a Deeper Still retreat. So there's right. an opportunity to go deeper into healing. So my retreat will be at the end of this month. And I've been through training. We'll begin to do some more training in preparation for the fall retreat, which we don't have a date set yet.
That'll be coming. If people want to check that out, where should they go?
They can just email me at elisadavis@ahcfriends.org. So that is Elisa, E-L-I-S-A, Davis at ahcfriends.org.
And we'll link that on our iChooseLife.org underneath the radio tab. Awesome. So if people want to find it there, they can. So if I'm tracking your timeline correctly, you sort of came to forgiveness yourself in a private confession to God and then went through the Bible study. Is that right?
And I would say that for many women, there has been a confession even before they start the Bible study, because they don't even really necessarily want to do the study unless they're open to what God has to show them through the study or through the retreat. So there's often a lot of work done ahead of time. I mean, God can do whatever he wants whenever he wants to.
Right.
So he does a lot of work before women get there. There's often different kind of variations of levels of healing. And I don't pretend to have those specifically assigned, like there's this level and this level and this level, but
but you see the variation in it.
As Judy used to say, Judy Hapke, she used to say, it's like an onion, peeling an onion. There's layer upon layer upon layer. And I think God wants to get down into that core of that, who that person is. And
right.
He does that really with everybody. So in the same way, even if a woman feels like she's already gone through some healing, there's nothing to fear by going through something again in a purposeful way, if for nothing else, to allow herself to grieve the loss of her baby and give that baby dignity through that.
Can you walk us through a little bit of what one of these Bible studies looks like? What are some of the things that you go through in those?
Well, initially, the first session or two are what I would call kind of like bonding sessions. The participants in the group we're making an effort for them to share their stories and to bond to one another. And these are small and they're closed groups, so there's not a free flow of people coming in and out.
Right.
And they're very confidential and very private. So in the first few couple of groups, they're sharing this and they're learning about the character of God, hopefully getting some corrections. If they see God as sort of distant, far off, and angry, they see him close, loving, and forgiving, and holy and true. All those characteristics of God together instead of maybe just one way or another. And then they begin to go into an understanding of how did they choose this? You know, what kinds of things led up to this? Sometimes it goes a ways back to some loss of a father or mother in their life. Maybe a divorce happened, or maybe they were assaulted or something earlier in life. Things like that. Things where they can talk about in a safe environment some of their history and what led up ultimately to the decision to be sexually active at a time when maybe they would have been better off not being sexually active and then getting pregnant. And then moving through understanding who played a role in the abortion decision, because it's not usually made in isolation. It's usually made with a number of voices participating in that decision.
So for you, one of those voices was that assistant putting that piece
Absolutely.
Of paper in your hand saying, here's your appointment, come back in 2 weeks.
Absolutely, yes. And sometimes we also, people play a part, even if they don't necessarily push you to have the abortion, but if they don't stand up for life.
Right, if they're passive.
They're passive. That's a part that they play. And so examining all of those decisions that and voices that were heard going into that decision and being able to work through a process of forgiving others and receiving God's forgiveness. And the anger that might be attached to that or depression that might be attached to that. And then moving towards really accepting the fact that they really do have a child.
Yeah.
And we believe that that child is with God and to celebrate the life of that child with the Lord. Mm-hmm. And then having some time to just acknowledge the life of that baby through a memorial service, which really seems to freak a lot of people out, but it's really a very beautiful, it's the most beautiful part of the entire Bible study.
Allen County Right to Life hosts a memorial every October. In the last couple of years, and I'm sure this has been going on for a while, but I've been here for the last couple of years. So I know from those couple of years that we've had women come and bring their own roses. We supply roses, but they bring their own roses and they have a name that sometimes has been given to them. Like one day they were, it just all of a sudden occurred to them, like, this is the name of your baby and it was a boy. Or like, this is the name of your baby and it was a girl. And so they come and they bring their rose and they lay the rose at the memorial and say that baby's name and the abortion date or the conception date or what the baby's due date would have been. And for them, that's a healing process to be able to actually give that baby a funeral. And so that's, yeah, very powerful, not only for the person who's there, but for all of us standing around watching that healing process happen.
Yeah, some of those women that have been there have been through our Bible studies. Mm-hmm. A couple of that have spoken about their testimonies.
Yeah.
One of the things that's kind of associated with the women who have come through the studies is a number of things have happened. One is all four, I think there's been four, of the Silent No More regional coordinators have all come through one of our Bible studies.
Right.
In Northern Indiana. And what Silent No More does is that they testify or give testimony publicly about how abortion affects men and women. And they're a little bit more of the public education and not necessarily political, but public education and giving public testimony.
Right.
And where we are more focused on the healing aspect.
Right. And on the individual.
And helping people get to that point where they can, if God calls them, share their stories and let the public know. Because literally, I mean, if you think about it, there's been millions upon millions of abortions.
Right. We're approaching 60 million in the U.S. alone since Roe v. Wade.
Now, some of the people, the women and the men represented by those abortions have had multiple abortions, but there still have been millions of men and women affected by abortion. So the harvest is plenty. I mean, there's a huge harvest of people who are wounded, have an abortion wounded heart,
right,
and need some healing.
If you or someone you know is dealing with grief and pain after an abortion decision, whether you had an abortion, convinced someone else to have an abortion, or even participated in a procedure, call 877-791-5475. You'll be referred to a pregnancy resource center in your area, a place where free and confidential services are available. That's 877-791-5475. 877-791-5475. A Hope Center has three different locations within the Fort Wayne area. If you're interested in reaching a Hope Center, you can call them at 260-422-3544 or by going to ahopecenter.org.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.